Battlefield Earth, Part 1, by L. Ron Hubbard. Copyright, 1982, by L. Ron Hubbard. This recording of the full-length reading of Battlefield Earth, Part 1, was published by arrangement with L. Ron Hubbard Library and was produced in 1994 by Books on Tape Incorporated, which holds the copyright there, too. This book is read by Michael Risotto. Battlefield Earth, Part 1, by L. Ron Hubbard. This book consists of 18 chapters and is 532 pages long. About the author. Born in 1911, the son of a U.S. naval officer, L. Ron Hubbard grew up in the great American West and was acquainted early with the rugged outdoor life before he took to the sea. The cowboys, Indians, and mountains of Montana were balanced with an open sea, temples, and the throngs of the Orient as Hubbard traveled through the Far East as a teenager. By the time he was 19, he had traveled over 250,000 sea miles and thousands on land as he prodded and asked and recorded his experiences in a series of diaries mixed with story ideas. Returning to the United States, Hubbard's insatiable curiosity and demand for excitement sent him into the sky as a pilot, where he quickly earned a reputation for his skill and daring before he turned his attention again to the sea. This time it was four-masted schooners and voyages into the Caribbean as Hubbard mixed adventure with an education that was to serve him later at the typewriter. While Hubbard's first articles were non-fiction and based upon his aviation experience, he soon began to draw from his travels to produce a wide variety of stories. Adventure, mysteries, travel through the Far East, westerns, detective, and finally, science fiction. In 1938, Hubbard was already established and recognized as one of the top-selling writers of the field. But a new magazine wanted new blood. Hubbard was urged to try his hand at science fiction. The red-headed author protested that he did not write about ray guns and rockets, but that he wrote about people. "That's just what we want," he was told. The result was a barrage of stories from Hubbard that changed the face of science fiction and excited intense critical comparison, then as now, with the best of H.G. Wells and Edgar Allan Poe. Today, Hubbard is recognized as one of the founding fathers of the great golden age of science fiction, who, like Robert Heinlein and a few other grand masters, continued to develop and significantly enlarge the contemporary literature genre he helped to create. At the same time, Hubbard's prodigious and continuing creative output over more than half a century as a professional writer assumed the proportions of a true publishing phenomenon. With more than 100 novels and novelettes, more than 200 short stories published under his own name, and such no less celebrated pen names as René Lafayette, Kurt von Rocken, and Winchester Remington Colt, among others, and more than 45 million copies of his fiction in a dozen languages sold throughout the world. Battlefield Earth became one more milestone in a fabled career that has made Hubbard one of the most prolific and influential authors of the 20th century. But the final magnum opus was yet to come. L. Ron Hubbard, after completing Battlefield Earth, sat down and did what few writers have dared contemplate, let alone achieve. He wrote the 10-volume space adventure satire, Mission Earth. Filled with a dazzling array of otherworld weaponry and systems, Mission Earth is a spectacular cavalcade of battles, of stunning plot reversals, with heroes and heroines, villains and villainesses, caught up in a superbly imaginative, intricately plotted invasion of Earth, as seen entirely and uniquely through the eyes of the aliens that already walk among us. With the distinctive pace, artistry, and humor that is the inimitable hallmark of L. Ron Hubbard, Mission Earth weaves a hilarious, fast-paced adventure tale of ingenious alien intrigue, told with biting social commentary in the great classic tradition of Swift, Wells, and Orwell. So unprecedented is this work that a new term, decology, meaning 10 books, had to be coined, just to describe its breadth and scope. With the manuscript completed and in the hands of the publisher and all of his other work done, L. Ron Hubbard departed his body on January 24, 1986. He left behind a timeless legacy of unparalleled storytelling richness for you, the reader, to enjoy, as other readers have, time and again, over the past half century. This brand new novel is dedicated to Robert A. Heinlein, A.E. Van Vogt, John W. Campbell, Jr., and all the merry crew of science fiction and fantasy writers of the 30s and 40s, the Golden Age, who made science fiction and fantasy the respected and popular literary genres they have become today. Introduction. Recently there came a period when I had little to do. This was novel in a life so crammed with busy years, and I decided to amuse myself by writing a novel that was pure science fiction. In the hard-driven times between 1930 and 1950, I was a professional writer not simply because it was my job, but because I wanted to finance more serious researches. In those days, there were few agencies pouring out large grants to independent workers. Despite what you might hear about Roosevelt Relief, those were Depression years. One succeeded, or one starved. One became a top-liner, or a gutter bum. One had to work very hard at his craft, or have no craft at all. It was a very challenging time for anyone who lived through it. I have heard it said, as an intended slur, he was a science fiction writer, and have heard it said of many. It brought me to realize that few people understand the role science fiction has played in the lives of Earth's whole population. I have just read several standard books that attempt to define science fiction and to trace its history. There are many experts in this field, many controversial opinions. Science fiction is favored with the most closely knit reading public that may exist, possibly the most dedicated of any genre. Devotees are called fans, and the word has a special prestigious meaning in science fiction. Few professional writers, even those in science fiction, have written very much on the character of SF. They are usually too busy turning out the work itself to expound on what they have written. But there are many experts on this subject, among both critics and fans, and they have a lot of worthwhile things to say. However, many false impressions exist, both of the genre and of its writers. So, when one states that he set out to write a work of pure science fiction, he had better state what definition he is using. It will probably be best to return to the day in 1938 when I first entered this field. The day I met John W. Campbell, Jr. A day in the very dawn of what has come to be known as the Golden Age of science fiction. I was quite ignorant of the field and regarded it, in fact, a bit diffidently. I was not there of my own choice. I had been summoned to the vast old building on 7th Avenue in dusty, dirty old New York by the very top brass of Street and Smith Publishing Company, an executive named Black, and another, F. Orland Tremain. Ordered there with me was another writer, Arthur J. Burks. In those days when the top brass of a publishing company, particularly one as old and prestigious as Street and Smith, invited a writer to visit, it was like being commanded to appear before the king or receiving a court summons. You arrived, you sat there obediently, and you spoke when you were spoken to. We were both, Arthur J. Burks and I, top-line professionals in other writing fields. By the actual tabulation of A.B. Dick, which set advertising rates for publishing firms, either of our names appearing on a magazine cover would send the circulation rate skyrocketing, something like modern TV ratings. The top brass came quickly to the point. They had recently started or acquired a magazine called Astounding Science Fiction. Other magazines were published by other houses, but Street and Smith was unhappy because its magazine was mainly publishing stories about machines and machinery. As publishers, its executives knew you had to have people in stories. They had called us in because, aside from our A.B. Dick rating as writers, we could write about real people. They knew we were busy and had other commitments. But would we be so kind as to write science fiction? We indicated we would. They called in John W. Campbell, Jr., the editor of the magazine. He found himself looking at two adventure story writers, and though adventure writers might be the aristocrats of the whole field and might have vast followings of their own, they were not science fiction writers. He resisted. In the first place, calling in top-liners would ruin his story budget due to their word rates. And in the second place, he had his own ideas of what science fiction was. Campbell, who dominated the whole field of SF as its virtual czar until his death in 1971, was a huge man who had majored in physics at Massachusetts Institute of Technology and graduated from Duke University with a Bachelor of Sciences degree. His idea of getting a story was to have some professor or scientist write it, and then doctor it up and publish it. Perhaps that is a bit unkind, but it really was what he was doing. To fill his pages, even he, who had considerable skill as a writer, was writing stories for the magazine. The top brass had to directly order Campbell to buy and to publish what we wrote for him. He was going to get people into his stories and get something going besides machines. I cannot tell you how many other writers were called in. I do not know. In all justice, it may have been Campbell himself who found them later on. But do not get the impression that Campbell was anything less than a master and a genius in his own right. Any of the stable of writers he collected during this golden age will tell you that. Campbell could listen. He could improve things. He could dream up little plot twists that were masterpieces. He well deserved the title that he gained and kept as the top editor and the dominant force that made science fiction as respectable as it became. Star Wars, the all-time box office record movie to date, exceeded only by its sequel, would never have happened if science fiction had not become as respectable as Campbell made it. More than that, Campbell played no small part in driving this society into the space age.